There is an event that I have to tell you about. It is one that I have attended 3 times in a row, and that is the NEO Summit. Y'all, it is honestly unlike any nonprofit event experience I have ever seen. This year, it will take place on September 18th and 19th in Indianapolis, Indiana. It is 2 full days of digital marketing and fundraising content, workshops, over-the-top fun summit parties, prizes, swag, and so much more. Dare I say, it is a masterclass in edutainment. They have truly mastered the balance between learning and having a really great time. Now, I have worked with them on getting you the lowest price ticket available anywhere. You can save $600 on your ticket by using my link in the show notes. Hope to see you there. Now let's head on over to today's episode.
You just have to really start asking yourself, do I want to live in a false narrative, in a story, in an environment that is filled with overwhelm, justification, delusion, denial, anxiety, chaos, frustration? Or do I want to live in one that's filled with peace and serenity and joy and hope and happiness and embodiment and empowerment and connection? And only we get to make that decision.
Hey there, you're listening to the Missions to Movements podcast, and I'm your host, Dana Snyder, digital strategist for nonprofits and founder and CEO of Positive Equation. This show highlights the digital strategies of organizations making a positive impact in the world. Ready to learn the latest trends, actionable tips, and the real stories from behind the feed? Let's transform your mission into a movement. Today, you get a front row seat into what my personal coaching and mastermind experience has been like working with Julie Solomon. I started listening to Julie's podcast, the Influencer Podcast, almost 5 years ago, joined her mastermind group last year to work on my business, and it really changed everything for me. I rethought my business, boundaries, and what I really want so differently over the past year. Her book, Get What You Want, just debuted, and so this is perfect timing for her to share her strategies behind her book launch, why we hold on to limiting beliefs, how to work through and understand our origin stories, and learn what's the number one thing you should invest in to grow your business and change your life. Let's go welcome Julie. This is a super special podcast episode for me because I am getting to bring into the Missions to Movements universe one of my favorite people, Julie Solomon. I was a part of her Shine Mastermind program last year. And gosh, Julie, I feel like I've listened to your podcast. I feel like it was when I first started my business 5 years ago at this point. And so it's been amazing to have the chance to work with you firsthand on my business. And this is a little bit of a different episode in the sense that I'm excited for others to get a chance to work with you and learn from you through this episode today, a little sneak peek into what I've had the opportunity to do with you in person and online for a year. Your business, even over the past 4 years of me listening to your podcast, the Influencer Podcast, has evolved so much. Can you share with listeners a little bit about your background and then maybe even more specifically, like in this current moment as the evolution has happened, where you're really finding the joy in the work you do?
Yeah. Kind of long story short, because I've had quite a crazy path. My traditional background, my corporate agency background is in PR. I was a publicist traditionally right out the gate of college in 2007. I moved to New York and I started doing music PR. I always had this part of me, this dream, this joy in me. And also, I was always really good at helping people crack open what that inner gift, I call it like their stardom, you know, what that inner stardom is within them and really help them crack that open so they can shine it out to the world. And, you know, I used to do this when I would intern, and you know, I remember interning in high school for the country music festivals that would happen in Nashville, Tennessee. And then I would go and I majored in broadcast journalism and mass communication. So I would have a wealth of internships with just a bunch of things that were happening at the University of Tennessee, where I went to school, went to New York, got a job in music PR. So was working with like some of the top music acts at the time, Grammy Award winning, you know, Lenny Kravitz, Pink, Maroon 5, Def Leppard, actors as well, and then went into book PR. And so was, again, you know, the way that I really approach publicity and PR and pitching yourself, which we can talk about today, is the foundational elements of that. And so foundationally, it was the same, but instead of working with musicians and actors, I was working with thought leaders and, you know, best-selling authors. And so I've always had this thing in me. I mean, I even married an actor, as you know, Dana. Like I have this thing of taking people that want to share their message with the world, that have this idea, this dream, that they want to leave a legacy that is greater than themselves. And I really help them crack that open. And so started doing that in PR, found myself in Los Angeles in 2012 when I met my husband. He was living there. We very quickly became pregnant. And so I was in this new city. Freelance PR I was doing at the time on the side. I didn't know a lot of people and I wasn't going into an office because I was doing my own thing. So as a way to meet people, I started blogging, motherhood lifestyle blog, as a way to connect with just the community around me. Because in LA, especially at that time, if you move to LA, you start a blog. That's just what you do. And for those that don't know, I know Dana knows because she lived in LA for a long time. LA really is, it's like the top 1% of the top 1% of what we really know to be now, like influencers, your content creators, your YouTubers, your TikTok stars. At the time, it was mostly bloggers and YouTubers and content creators on Instagram. But if you are at the top of your field, you are most likely in LA. It has gotten more spread out nationally now, more than ever. But back in 2012, 2013, no one was doing blogging, content creating anywhere else like the people in LA were. And so living there lended me to connect with a lot of people, meet a lot of people, be invited to a lot of events. A really good friend of mine who was also in our mastermind last year, Angela Lanter, was the first person that got me into blogging. She was YouTubing at the time and she was like, you should start a blog. And so I started one with this kind of lifestyle motherhood spin on it. And it was okay. It was great. I loved, you know, writing. It really kind of helped me hone my voice and my message and allowed me to kind of become a better content creator. But the type of stuff that I was talking about, it always felt very forced. It was like I was trying to put myself in this box that I didn't belong in. I was losing my passion for PR at the time. And I so badly wanted to like be accepted into this world of the influencer elite of LA. And, you know, I wanted to be front row at Fashion Week and I wanted to work with all the brands and I wanted to, you know, have all of that. But it never really felt aligned with the content. You know, I'm not a fashion influencer. I love skincare, but I'm not a beauty influencer. Those just weren't natural to me. And my husband would always say, Julie, if you would just stay Julie Publicist, and like figure out a way to be that, but in this world, I think that you would really start to get what you wanted. And I would be like, oh no, that's not sexy. That's not fun. Like no one wants to invite a publicist to Fashion Week. Like, you know, I want to be like all these other girls. And it just never really hit. The one thing though, that in that process that I started doing, and I started doing very, very well, very quickly, was being able to monetize my blog with no followers. And at the time, I probably had less than 5,000. So in the grand scheme of like, when it comes to really building a personal brand, that's not a ton of followers. And I was able to monetize, not just a little bit, but I was able to start getting up to about $5,000 a month consistently in brand partnerships. And so I started having these women, these content creators, these bloggers come to me and they're like, Julie, I don't mean to sound rude, but how is it that like, I have hundreds of thousands of followers, I have the perfectly curated Instagram feed. Brands are sending me gifts every single day. I just have all these packages in the mail. I have the best clothes, the best makeup. I'm invited to all the events. I'm sitting front row at Fashion Week and I'm making $40 a week off of my shirt that I'm liking to know it through an affiliate link. And I'm like, well, you don't know how to pitch yourself. And the other thing that I started to notice is that when I would go to these blogger events in LA, which there's like 15 a day,
yeah,
feel so lucky to be able to have the opportunity to do that. I would go to these events and you would have, you know, it would be an event for Estee Lauder and you would have the entire Estee Lauder team sitting there and then their entire PR team sitting there. And then you would have 50 girls sitting in the corner taking selfies. And I'm sitting here thinking, why aren't these girls talking to, like, the money is sitting right in front of you and you're not talking to these brands. It never made sense to me.
Yeah.
And I think because of my background as a publicist, that had just been ingrained in me, you know, very early on in my career, that you got to focus on building relationships, on meaningful relationships. You got to focus on asking someone, like, what is it that you need? And how can I be a solution provider for that? And how can I help you get what you want, which then helps me get what I want? I always kind of had those things ingrained in me. So it was very natural for me to go to an event. I wasn't really relating to the girls that were sitting in the corner taking selfies, but I could relate to the business women that were behind the scenes running 100%. These companies.
You were looking at it from a completely different perspective.
Completely different lens. And it was at the beginning when it wasn't necessarily this free-for-all, but there was money to be made and these brands were really starting to see that there was money to be made. So very early on, I mean, I remember I had like 200 people that followed me on YouTube and I had like a $20,000 brand partnership because they wanted the content. It wasn't about my followership. It was about the other ideas that I was able to pitch them to make me valuable. It's always about how can you show up and be valuable? So long story short, I started to do that. And within a matter of like 12 to 18 months, I started to consult and help these other women that were like, well, I want more of that. Can you help me with that? So I started doing a one-to-one supporting these women, but then I kind of reached a capacity. I was still doing PR on the side. I had my own brand partnerships I was doing. I was trying to build my own personal brand. And so this was in 2016. And I was like, instead of being a one-to-one, how could I be a one-to-many? And at the time online, I started seeing these things called online courses. There were people out there that started creating these online courses and it was on anything, you know, want to learn how to become a yoga instructor, buy this course, want to learn how to build your business on Pinterest, buy this course, want to learn how to grow on Instagram, buy this course. And there was zero courses out there that talked about pitching, how to grow your blog, how to build a personal brand, how to be your own publicist. Like there was nothing out there that taught what it was that I had been doing at this point for the last couple of years and that I had been consulting and helping other women do. And so I was like, well, huh, this will kind of essentially take me out of business when it came to being a publicist because you don't really need to hire a publicist if you learn this method. But maybe it's going to allow me to show up and do what I really feel called to do and my purpose, which is to support these women at a higher level and create more impact. So I bought a course that taught you how to create courses for like $300 and just kind of white knuckled it and put together. And I knew that my method was sound because A, it was the same method that I had used for years to pitch clients for media. It's what I used to pitch myself and it's what I had been using to pitch other people. And I created my very first course, which is still around today, called Pitch It Perfect in 2016. And that really helped me kind of propel to a different level. And it didn't matter how many followers they had. You know, we would have women that would come through with 300 followers. They would take the program. It takes 3 hours to get through. They would take a pitch template, pitch a brand, and like immediately make $1,500. Then they were just blowing their own dang minds. They were like, this is insane. Like, how is this possible? And so I started to learn. And that's the thing that with anything that you do, if you have a formula or method in place that helps someone get to where it is that they want to go and it's proven, like you really can't fail. And so that started to take off. And then in 2017, I launched the Influencer Podcast, which then just kind of propelled my brand and my name and my likeness to a whole other arena.
Wow. So maybe I was listening for 5 years because that would be right when you launched.
Yeah. It was 5 years in April that we launched.
And that 5 years in April is when I launched my business. So that's probably about accurate.
Right then. And it was kind of a marriage of like, I had the right product and I was offering it to the right person And then I had this marketing tool that was this podcast that was generating the content, the free valuable content that was then getting people curious into wanting to dive more. And that course, it changed my entire life. It changed my business. That course has gone on to be a multi seven figure in revenue course. And it's insane to think that a little tiny course like that can do that. But it just shows the power of, you know, what a method can do and what an impact can do if you just keep the focus. And obviously the course has grown and changed a lot since then, but it has allowed me to not only impact, you know, we've had over 5,000 people go through that program,
wow,
make millions of dollars in revenue themselves, like total, you know, has been crazy, not only for my business, but for other people's businesses.
Yeah.
You know, now I speak on stages and I have masterminds and I help women at, you know, an even higher level. And I have a book that's coming out on June 7th called Get What You Want. So all of that kind of led to really the business that I have now.
I love all of that. Thank you for going down kind of history lane. And I think there's so many things to unpack there. I mean, I love the fact that you said you didn't have a lot of followers. I know this is something that we can kind of talk about too within your book. You talk about the origin story, but I think there's this misconception that we have to be a big organization. We need thousands and thousands of followers in order to get a sponsorship, to have somebody say yes to being on a podcast, to literally anything that we think that we want. These like misconceptions that this false reality is created around, and it's not true. It's not true. Right. I mean, gosh, for the fact of the people that I've asked to even be on this show, to the fact of I had my podcast for less than a month and I had a sponsorship come to me. I didn't even pitch. So what can happen when you're just putting yourself out? And I think putting yourself out in a positive light and like what you said, building the really meaningful relationships is going to guide you. So, I mean, in our case with our relationship, I listened to your podcast for roughly about 4 years. And then I did not purchase Pitch It Perfect. But when you open the doors, the opportunity for a five-figure investment to become a part of a mastermind, I raised my hand and I was like, yeah, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting, all the kind of like nuggets of content and information, and you're building a relationship in my ear for 40-ish minutes every single time when I would listen to you. So this is just for any listeners, even if somebody is not taking the action that you desire of them in this very instant, trust that it's building and trust mm-hmm. that it's growing. And when the right opportunity is presented to them, they're going to take the action. So you mentioned you just released your book, which is super yes. exciting, Get What You Want. And gosh, the goal of writing a book, I mean, to me anyways, seems like a faraway dream and sometimes too daunting to even start. What excited you and really felt right about writing the book now?
Yeah, you know, I heard a really interesting statistic by the New York Times. They said that 80% of Americans want to write a book, 1% of them do.
80% want to write a book? Wow. Yeah.
And out of the 80% that want to write a book, only 1% of them actually do, which is really interesting. And I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, well, I have to be at this certain level, or I have to have X amount of followers, or I have to have X amount of dollars in my bank account to then be worthy of blank, which I just don't think can be farther from the truth. I think that what happens is that we can put a lot of expectations on ourselves about how something's supposed to look. You know, I'll see women do that where it's like, well, I can't launch this. And it's like, well, why can't you? And it's like, well, because I have to make $1 million when I launch it, and I'm not going to launch it making $1 million at the gate. And I'm like, well, nobody does. You know, it's like, well, I can't write a book unless it's going to be a bestseller, unless it's, you know, published by a big house. And I'm like, well, you're already limiting yourself to what's possible. I know authors that they didn't get a big publishing deal until 8-9 books in. Same thing with me. I wouldn't have gotten a publishing deal if I didn't have 6-7 years of consistently creating and putting out content every single day, every single week on my podcast, on social media, through my website. So I think that we have to remember those building blocks. And with my book, and why now, I guess, and why I'm excited to put it out into the world, is that I feel like this book was a process. I got approached to write a book proposal in November of 2018.
Oh, wow. That's
a long, long. Yeah. So this could have come out. Well, it probably would have come out in like 2020. I'm really glad it didn't. Really glad it didn't.
Hindsight.
Right. Or even 2021. And so I think, but because of just, you know, life and business and other things that were going on, it took me a year to get the proposal done. So I didn't submit it until the end of 2019. At the beginning of 2020, we got an offer from the publishing house that I ended up going with, HarperCollins, pretty immediately, but then COVID hit. And so I didn't have a signed contract until that summer. And then I had had a baby and I was like, well, I can't write a book now because I just had a baby. And so it was like all of these kind of things that were happening. But I think that's when you just have to believe in the greater plan and understanding that is greater than our own, because it allows it to come out now. And I think that now it's needed, because especially for women in this post-pandemic stage that we're in, we are so disconnected from our bodies, our feelings, our emotions, our desires. We are so disembodied. We will say that we want something, but man, do we do the exact opposite. You know, we will declare that this is what we want, but our actions could not be farther from that. And for me, that's just a sign of how disconnected and out of tune we really are in our own alignment. And so this book, hopefully, you know, my hope for this book and for the women who read it, and I think it's for women who, they're like me in a lot of ways, or how I've been throughout my life. You know, they're sick and tired of being sick and tired. I think it's kind of for two phases, if you will. I see a woman that she's exhausted, she's burnt out, she's tired of burning the candle at both ends. She has this idea, she has this desire, but she can't seem to figure it out. She's all over the place. And it's like, she either doesn't know what her purpose is, or she may know what it is, but she's not living it out. She doesn't have a vision for herself. She's so afraid to make a mistake. So she doesn't make any action at all, which is just keeping her in that perpetual state of being stuck. It's like, she's so just like a neutral, like I think a car in neutral. She's just idling constantly. And she's in this reactive state of like, oh, my kids need me, or oh, I've got to do this, or oh, the boss, or oh, the that, and nothing.
Excuses from everywhere besides dialing like, to where you should be.
Man, does she like go to war for her excuses. Like, she wants all these things, but she can never get it. And she's going to tell you why she can never get it. And she's going to give you all the reasons why she can never get it and talk about it all day long. So there's that. And I was that for a very, very long time. And I talk about that in the book, and we can talk about that later. Or I also think that it's for the woman who maybe she's kind of more like how I've been the last couple of years, you know, like she's checked off a lot of boxes. Maybe she feels secure in her relationships. She feels secure at her job. You know, like, does she want a promotion? Maybe. Does she want to, if she's a solopreneur, entrepreneur, does she want to scale her business? Probably. But she feels good with everything that she's accomplished. However, she knows that there's something more. And there's just this thing in her of like, I know I've got this ability to impact at a much greater level. You know, I want to speak on stages. I want to write books. I want to be able to really leave a legacy that is expansive and that is really, I think, vital to whoever she is meant to serve. But there's just something kind of there. It may be an upper limit problem. It may be a limiting belief from her origin story that maybe has just kind of been threading through her life that she doesn't even really see yet, which is like, that was a big thing with me of, you know, right when I thought like things were going good, like another thing would happen. And I'm like, what's going on? I thought I like had gotten to the other side of this. So I think it's for like those two types of women. So if anyone's listening, if maybe you feel like the first person that I described, or maybe you feel like the other one, I think that they could get a lot out of this book, because what it does is it's really, I mean, and Dana, you know this about me. I love a step-by-step. I love a roadmap.
I was going to say, it's not just a book that you read, but there's places for, it's almost like worksheets.
Yeah.
Where you workshop through issues and questions and things yourself, that you create kind of like blueprints. So it's not just a book that, okay, I read it and I put it on the shelf and it's not something that I can take any actionable steps from, or you read it and you think you can take actionable steps and then you don't really have the tools in order to put it into place and you don't. Right. Yeah. There's placements in almost every chapter, I believe, that there's questions and activities for you to be able to engage with. And I have a pre-copy, but I also ordered a pre-sale book. So for someone who is listening, first come, first serve to get this copy from Julie. Since I have the pre one that she sent to me for this interview, I will mail whoever DMs me on Instagram and just say, I love Julie and I want her book. DM me that on Instagram at Positive Persuasion with one E.
So I can tag
Julie.
I'll repost
and,
it.
Yeah, repost it, share, let us know why you want the book, why you're excited, what you got from this episode, and I will snail mail it to you so you can check it out and you can go through these exercises yourself. So good. And you are, I would say, one of the queens of launch strategies. And we were talking about this a little bit beforehand. I really like sharing on this podcast kind of the behind the scenes of how a launch comes together, whether it's I broke down how I launched this podcast to a campaign, to a book, to a product launch. I think so many different launch strategies can be repurposed for different things.
Yeah.
When you were starting the planning of this launch for the book, what were the different components that you felt were necessary to make it a success?
Yeah. And it's funny that you say that because I actually have a running document in my Google Drive right now that says, like, for the next book launch, this is everything that we're doing differently and like everything that we're keeping the same. And here's the thing, too. I think that with my background in publicity, I really went into this extremely realistic. I think a lot of authors can be like, you know, the ego man, like it serves us so well, but it can really get in the way and it can get in the way of you really enjoying the process and the unfolding of what is. And so a lot of times people come out the gate and they're like, okay, I want a best-selling book, which is an entirely different launch strategy in and of itself. You know, and I'll just be completely candid with people. I know people that have sold 50,000 books during their pre-order and week of release launch, which that counts as your first week of release, that do not hit the New York Times bestsellers list, and people that sell 500 and hit it. So wow. It's not about being a bestseller. It's not about the numbers. There's
again,
so much
talking
that goes,
about that vanity metrics there.
Yes, there's so much that goes behind it and where the book's being bought from and making sure that they're individual people with individual credit cards. And there are people out there that will game the system. If they've got enough money, they will essentially set up these entire camps of people that will just game the system with all these different credit cards and all of these different retailers. And there's a whole strategy behind it. So you can start to really suffocate the process and end up doing a lot more than you really need to. For our book, I knew that, I mean, of course, I don't know an author who doesn't want a best-selling book. Like, I've never heard an author be like, I want to write a book and I don't care if it's a best-selling book. But I do think for anyone listening and for myself, I have to remind myself, don't get so caught up in that. Yes, it's great for the vanity metrics, but it's about the impact and the reach. And so for me, I don't want to game the system. And yeah, I'm a bestseller, but 50,000 copies are sitting in my garage, not impacting anybody. That doesn't sit well with me. Yeah. Right. So to me, I knew that my reader that I described earlier, you got to get really clear on who you're writing for and who is the avatar. Just like whenever you're launching anything, like what are you offering and who is it for? It's that simple. And you have to understand who is it for so intimately that where do they go for content, for trust, for information, for really figuring out their next steps? And for my reader, she goes to podcasts. So I knew that the podcast circuit was going to be one that I really wanted to focus on more so than GMA and Today Show because, hey, again, great for vanity metrics, but it does not sell books. No one watches it except for my mom. Like that's not where people are nowadays. And I know that from my PR days. Those morning talk shows do not sell books. A podcast is going to sell a book way faster. Why? Because it's long form content of media. It's a long form medium.
Well, and there's a trust normally with the host of the show.
Yes. You have more time to build know, like, and trust as opposed to a 2.5 minute segment on a TV show. And then now we're going back to Dale to talk about the weather. It's just a different platform. So we focused on podcasts, a lot of them. I'm doing like a 65 podcast tour, virtual tour. I started back in March. So I've had a good 3 months of getting these podcasts through. And I think it's also important for anyone that's listening, whether you're launching a book or launching something else, it's also not about like, I'm only going to do the podcasts that have 15,000 million listens a month.
Yeah.
Because again, that becomes a different thing. You know, I've gone back to people that I trust, people that I like. Of course, there's some big podcasts in the mix of that. But then, you know, I have like you, Dana, you recently started a podcast. And so it's building and it's growing, but you're a student of mine. So I want us to come and have this conversation. And I know that your audience, if you resonated with me, your audience is probably going to resonate with me to some extent. And so to me, that makes more sense than like having to force this kind of box that you put yourself in. So podcasts were really important. TV, I'm doing some, but it's just not, again, I don't care about the vanity of it. It's not a big focus for me. Doing some kind of newspapers and things like that, but then more so book clubs. Book clubs is something that I'm really focused on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You
know,
and you want to make sure it's the right book club. I'm not going to go and try to pitch myself to a book club that only loves to read fiction because this isn't a fiction title. I want to make sure that I'm talking to a book club of women who are interested in business development. They're interested in personal development. They're interested in self-help and really getting to the other side of some stuff because those are the topics of my book. And so book clubs, I think, are really a great focus. And then the other thing that we're doing a ton of are Instagram Lives once the book comes out. So the week of release and about 2 weeks after that, I'm doing about 35 to 40 lives with just peers, colleagues, friends of mine. Because again, that's just a great way to get in front of people's social media. And I think the beautiful thing for anyone who's launching anything, the more that you put yourself out there and talk about your offer over and over again, the more that it becomes natural for you to really embody the message and what it is that you're saying. So those three things from a media kind of perspective, I think have been great for us so far. I'll really know more once the book kind of comes out and we start to get some feedback. But those three things I think are great to focus on. I did mention like TV, I don't think drives a lot. I don't love the idea of book buys. So that's when, you know, you go to a company or you go to a nonprofit or you go somewhere and you're like, okay, if you buy 2,000 copies of my book, I'll come speak on your stage. Because again,
oh, interesting.
If they're buying those 2,000 copies to then give to the audience and you're going to have time to sign the book, have a connection with the audience and like, and part of the speaking gig could be referencing the book, then I think it's fantastic. Do a book buy then. But if they're just buying your book and you don't know what's happening with the books and you're not getting in front of the audience, I don't really think that's an impactful way to drive the needle. But I do think if you can get on some stages, that's a good thing. And it doesn't have to be the biggest stage in the world. It could even be virtual stages. I've been doing some virtual conferences. I'm going to be doing some keynotes this summer. But I think that's another really great way, specifically with books, to launch a book.
You know I am all about the latest tech tools to help make your life easier. This episode is brought to you by Feather. Over 1,200 nonprofits of all shapes and sizes use Feather's digital marketing tools to increase engagement, boost online donations, promote events, recruit volunteers, and ultimately do more good. So if you're tight on time and looking for a solution that simplifies and automates your online donor journey, head to feather.co or click the link in the show notes to learn more. That's feather.co. And currently have those strategies. I know some of them, obviously the podcast, for example, this one is launching, listeners are listening, and you can go and you can purchase the book now.
Yes.
From a pre-sale perspective, have any of those tactics been specific towards generating those pre-sale numbers?
No.
Oh.
So with media, you want all of that to come out the week of release or really like the month of release. And the reason is, and this kind of goes back to some things that have just changed in the consumer marketplace in general, especially over the last 18 months, you know, a book that has no sense of urgency because you can get it forever. There's no deadline. There's no fear of missing out. If you're talking about something in March that doesn't come out until June, someone's going to be like, oh, well, yeah, I'll just get it in June. You know, unless they're just kind of an uber fan of yours, there's no incentive to order it. So you can put together like a pre-ordering launch campaign, which we've done. Like there's incentives if you pre-order the book. You get invited to a live workshop with me that only those people that pre-order the book get invited to this. You get a signed copy. There's a lot of bells and whistles and bonuses that you can add to that. But I think that gone are the days when you're doing this like massive long runway. just like when you launch anything, I mean, there is this sweet spot of like when you need to start kind of planting the seeds and then when you really start pushing it and then the cart opens. But you don't want to be talking about something 3 to 4 months before it's happening just because the attention span.
Yeah, it's going to be completely lost.
It's going to get so lost in the noise. Are the amount of options and choices that we as consumers, especially consumers on social media, have now. It's like in one ear and out the other. And you have to remember that with any kind of launch, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah.
It's also a team sport, and you're only as strong as your ask. This is where you have to put your pitching hat on and your asking hat on, and do not be afraid to ask for anything and everything that you want. Start pulling out the favors, start going to those people. Even if you're like, oh, I don't really think it doesn't matter. They can say no to you. It's fine. Like, just go and ask your ask. This is the time to do that. If I could do anything differently, one of the things is I would tighten up the runway, the pre-launch runway even more, and the promotion timeframe even more.
Make it even shorter. So once the book is live, I know you have an event or a couple in-person events. Is that what then happens afterwards that gets sprinkled out?
Yeah. And then that's the other thing that when it comes to launching, and again, and this is even with any evergreen product, a book or a course or whatever, we put so much emphasis on the pre-launch and the launch like week. And then it's like, no one ever talks about it again. It's like, this thing is out for forever. It's my job to now launch this thing and talk about it for the rest of eternity. So the rest is really, you know, some authors that have come before me that have been gracious enough to share their feedback. They're like, oh, you think you've been working hard for the last 6 months? This is where the where work starts. Like, now you actually got to like really put this thing out. But I think that it comes in, just like with everything in life, it comes in stages, you know, and I'm really heavy in a lot of media at once because it's going to hit at the same time. That will kind of dissipate. And then it's going to leave space to do more of the event. So I'm doing a live in-person event in Nashville on June 7th. And then I'm going to be doing an event later this summer in New York City. I've got something in LA that we're working on, something in Dallas. But I chose, instead of to kind of suffocate myself and like have to figure all of that out immediately, I just really focused on, just for now, like in this stage, what is really essential for this stage? And then what's essential for the next stage? And what's essential for the next stage? You don't have to do it all at once. And I think that that's where we can get really caught up in.
Which I think sounds a little bit about setting your boundaries, which you talk about in your book. And I want to go there for a little bit. So some of the concepts in the book, it was so interesting. And you mentioned this too, that when I was reading the book, I was learning a whole side of Julie that I didn't know existed because I know you now.
Right.
And one story that was really fascinating that really stood out to me too was your time in New York City. I loved my time in Manhattan and I was in my younger 20s. And so I think we can both, you're younger and so you're like trying to figure it out. But there was a story, and I want to read actually a section from it because I think it's so interesting and I think so many people can resonate with being in this moment. But essentially, you weren't making a ton of money. You were trying to figure out, as a lot of us are when we first moved to Manhattan.
I was making $25,000 a year.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, that's way less than I was making when I first moved there. But again, the timing I think was different. Yeah. What year was that?
2007.
2007. Okay. Yeah, definitely some years in between. So you were working for this company. And you basically realized weeks turned into months. You'd worked there for more than a year. There was no raise. And you're like, I just probably have to go back home. And that was kind of like in your head, you had created that mindset. So you say, I made an appointment with Linda and Charlene to put in my 2 weeks notice. I sat in her office and I told her I couldn't afford to be there anymore. Then this is what I love. Linda asked you, how much would it cost for you to stay? And you say, I was so confused by that question. How much? I didn't even know the opportunity to stay was possible. So I couldn't give her an answer. I had no idea. I hadn't even considered it. What does she mean? How much would it cost? So you say she was seeing me in a way that I had never seen myself. God, I can resonate with that. I feel like in so many different moments in life. Why do you think we do that to ourselves?
You know, I think that in some ways, if you're young, like I did not have the tools then. And whether you're young or older, I think it comes down to that. I think that we do it to ourselves because A, we don't know what we don't know. And I, you know, I say that in the book. And if we don't have the courage, or if someone doesn't kind of shine a light on this potential new perspective or lens that we can have, we will just continue to believe whatever that story is. And so that's why I think that we do it to ourselves because it keeps us safe. It keeps us not having to be curious, not having to push ourselves, not having to think outside of the box. It's so much easier just to do what is kind of complacent. I mean, and I wouldn't even call myself a lazy person, but like that is a lazy way of thinking, of not even giving myself the gift of being like, well, is there another choice here? It's learned helplessness is what I would say that is.
Do you think that stemmed from, which is kind of the next thing I want to jump into, you talk a lot about an origin story. Mm-hmm. And I think it was until I read through the steps that you give to figure that out, I was like, God, I was like, what is my origin story? Like, it's a really hard concept to think about and to really like place. And I think to try and pinpoint that and where you are, you say, and I think this leads into what happened in the New York story, the problem with our origin story is that it holds us back. We fall victim to our origin story when we use it to define our current reality. So you lend this advice of these three A's that you talk about to kind of help break down what your origin story could be. And so for everybody listening, get out your notes or something and just write down, can you share with us what are the three A's to kind of go through crafting and figuring out where our origin story is and maybe how it might be holding us back?
Yeah. So first with an origin story, because people may be like, what the crap is that? So an origin story is what I call it. It's basically the stories that come typically from our origin. So these can either come to us or at us or from us by our experiences, our family, our upbringing, our religion, our culture, whatever it is. It is the stories and the belief systems that shape how we view and perceive the world. Now, when we're children, we don't know any different. But as we get older and we start to become adults and we can think and feel for ourselves a little bit more, some of us will then take on these origin stories and they become our own stories. And so how we perceive the world, how we view the world, how we communicate with other people. So you could have an origin story, for example, like in order to succeed, I have to struggle. Mm. And I believe that because when I was growing up, XYZ, or I believe that the only way for me to go out and have fun with friends is to drink. And I believe that because when I was growing up, X, right. Y, and Z,
right.
I believe that sugar is bad. And if I eat it, I have to shame myself for it because, and so it's what are these, and a belief is nothing more than a thought that you tell yourself over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So what are these things that you are telling yourself? And I want to shine a light. There's could be origin stories that we have that positively influence us. You know, there's a lot of stories of perseverance and resilience and not giving up. And, you know, I came from a family that didn't have a lot growing up. And so kind of seeing them have to like survive and figure it out was a great part of my origin story. But then also that belief that survival is all that there is and there's no such thing as thriving was also implemented in that origin story too. So
starting positive equation, I thought no one will hire me because I'm an individual versus having a big company brand behind me.
Right.
I had a really hard time. I asked probably, I went to current clients that I had at the time and I was like, do you think this is a good idea? Would somebody actually hire me? Like I could not wrap my mind around the fact that not being a big business agency that somebody would actually hire me to do something. And everybody was like, right. Yeah, of course we would.
Right. And so it's like, that was a story that you were just telling yourself and choosing to believe. And so the first thing that I love to ask people is when you start to identify these stories, the three A's can kind of help you do this. But when you start to kind of catch yourself in the moment of like, oh, that is so interesting that I have like totally made that up and told myself for months or years or decades or my entire life. You know, I had an origin story that I wasn't capable of managing money. I was never good at math in school. That was my worst subject. I was never good with numbers. And so I had made up and told myself that I'm not good with math. I'm not good with numbers. That's never going to change. I can't do anything about it. And for me, because of how I was raised in a small town upbringing, it was a man. Some man was going to come in and like figure all that out for me. So I didn't have to figure it out myself, which then created this financial hierarchy in my story as well, that like men and their financial pursuits and their businesses were more important than mine. And so I had to really uncover and unlock all of that. And I share a lot of that in the book as well. But no matter what your origin story is, you have to start asking yourself, what is the payoff of me thinking that? So I'll give you a great example. And this is so random, but fascinating. I had a client once that was in one of my coaching programs. And we were talking about, you know, what are the kind of the triggers or the things that are kind of keeping you from getting closer to what it is that you want? And she was talking about how as long as she could remember, she would cough all the time. And she was like, I don't know what it is. Like when I was growing up, I would cough all the time. My parents would like constantly be worrying about me. They would take me to the doctor. Nothing would be wrong. You know, maybe it was allergies, maybe it was this, but like, I can't ever stop coughing. And I was like, well, what's the payoff of you constantly coughing? And when we went down the layers of it, she then was able to figure out that her origin story taught her that if she coughed, she got attention.
Wow.
And so the more that she coughs, the more attention that she gets. And then when that happened, it was just like this light bulb moment that she was like, oh my gosh, I have been holding myself back for so long because I have said that like, in order to get anything that I want, I have to get this kind of attention. It has to be this like dramatic, chaotic thing. It can't be easy. I have to create drama around it. And then like after that, she never coughed again. It was like so weird.
It was completely just in her mind.
Mental, yeah, this story that she learned at a really young age. Oh, when I cough, I get a bunch of attention. And so from this and what I walked her through and what I've used from unlocking my own origin stories. And again, this is when it's you believe something or you tell yourself something and it's keeping you from getting what you want. If you have an origin story that's getting you closer to what you want, then like great belief system, keep believing it. These are the scarcity limiting beliefs. The first step, there's three A's that I love to use. They stand for awareness, acceptance, and action. So awareness is the first one. And this is always the first step to any kind of recovery process. If anyone listening has ever been a part of any therapy groups or recovery circles, they've probably heard of the three A's. They're very well known in those groups. That's where I learned them. And I love to adapt them and use them in my work. And I talk about them in the book. So awareness is simply, it's just the identification that there's a problem or dysfunction or belief that exists in your life that needs to change.
That's a big step though.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I am aware that I am coughing all the time and that I am doing it to get attention, right? Acceptance is the second one. And this is actually the most challenging one. This is the most uncomfortable place that we have to go to because this is where we have to say like, okay, I'm aware that this happened. Now I have to accept that it's my responsibility to change it. So this problem, it's not all of me, but it is a part of me and it begins and ends with me. It's not her fault, his fault, their fault, my parents' fault. It's not daddy issues, mommy issues, money issues. It's my issues. And even though I can't change or control if something happened to me, I have to accept that it did. And I have to now accept that it's my responsibility of how I respond and react to it. So if you think of your life as a jigsaw puzzle, this is a piece that no longer fits and it needs to be removed. And you have to be the one to remove it. It's nobody else's responsibility to do that. And that's why this is the hardest one, because this is when we have to start taking responsibility for the results that we're seeing in our lives, which no one wants to do.
But then how refreshing and like a relief I would feel like at that stage of acceptance, once you've reached that, that you would just have come across you.
Yeah. Oh, and I'll give you a great example. So my husband is a sexual abuse survivor. Obviously, it's not his fault that that happened to him. What he had to start taking acceptance of is how that situation and him not really dealing with the trauma, how that was playing out in his life, his addictive patterns, his behavior, you know, how he was responding. And a lot of it, he didn't even realize it for a very long time because he had bottled it down. But once he became aware that, wow, this happened and this has been a huge part of my life and it has actually caused a lot of dysfunction and a lot of trauma and a lot of addictive behavior in my life, he was able to accept, I do have the power to start getting to the other side of whatever this is. So what acceptance allows us to do, it allows us to take back that sense of hopelessness or helplessness or disempowerment that we feel like we've lost because we keep putting it in the hands of other people or other places or other things to fix for us.
Yeah, so powerful.
So that's acceptance. The last one is action. And that's just the plan that once we have awareness, once we accept, then it's the plan that we can start to implement to recover and restore all the things that have been lost because of this origin story, this belief, this dysfunction, this traumatic event. So this is where things like confidence, self-esteem, joy, serenity, balance, this is where those kinds of things start coming in. What's interesting with people is that a lot of times they wait. They're like, well, I can't get the awareness until I'm confident. It's the confidence that's going to give me the awareness that then I'm going to be. And it's like, no, it's actually the awareness and the acceptance and then the action that then leads to the confidence, not the other way around. And so you just have to really start asking yourself, do I want to live in a false narrative, in a story, in an environment that is filled with overwhelm, justification, delusion, denial, anxiety, chaos, frustration? Or do I want to live in one that's filled with peace and serenity and joy and hope and happiness and embodiment and empowerment and connection? And only we get to make that decision. And, you know, I was actually talking to someone this weekend. She was had an early review of the book and she said that she was reading it and someone saw her reading it and they were just like, get what you want. Ew, why would you read something like that? And they were just, wow. They were so disgusted at how powerful and actionable that was. They were like, that's just so selfish. And like, ooh, like, why would you read that? And she was like, well, what should I be reading? Don't get what I want.
Yeah, like, why would I not want to get what I want?
Right. Like, compared to what? And I think that that's by nature, our brains are hardwired to go to what's safe, because it's like, we always have this fear of 100%. Like survival, right? Yeah. What's safe, what's small, what's complacent, what's compartmentalized, because that's what we think keeps us safe. And I think that it's science, it's been proven that we tend to focus on the negatives 10 times more than we will focus on the positives. So of course, that can be triggering to somebody who doesn't think that getting what they want is possible or doesn't think that getting what they want. And mostly it makes me sad for that person because I'm like, you don't even realize that you're worthy of getting what you want. And yeah. That's really what the 3 A's will help you do. It restores that worthiness piece. And that's what I talk about a lot in the book, is there's a worthiness stuff threaded all in that, because I love reading books. It's like one of my only hobbies. And
I would
read books, self-help books, leadership books, development books, and they were always really great at like making me feel good and like, let's go like reach my goals and I can do it. But they were less conducive to helping me kind of feel better about myself, if that makes sense. Like a lot of times I would feel more overwhelmed. I'm not doing enough.
Definitely.
I've been doing it all wrong. Now I've got to start over. And so with my book, I really wanted to thread in there that it comes from your belief in a new possibility, and that you're worthy of believing a new possibility.
That's actually really a good point. After I finished reading it, I didn't feel behind.
Mm.
And I think any time that I've read, I mean, I love Seth Godin, right? But it's like, I'm like, oh gosh, I have to jump on like the latest thing. I have to like...
Right, like I have to shut my business down and start from scratch.
And like get my website and like rewrite everything. And I have to like do this whole new social media strategy. And it's like, I didn't feel that way. It was kind of like a refreshing... I liked how it flowed. It was, again, I think everybody, you should go and get this book, no matter as a listener. I have nonprofit professionals. I have entrepreneurs. There's marketing professionals that are still working a full-time 9-to-5 or whatever hours people work these days. But I think no matter what position you're in, there's always something that you're looking to grow from and change about yourself and get to that next stage. So it would be silly for me to not mention in this process, and even what you just talked about, and doing so within a group and how doing it within a group can be so beneficial. And I'm talking about masterminds, of course, and the importance of them. It's actually towards the very end of your book. And again, I just want to read something really quick. You note, this is the best business advice I could ever give someone. If you want to be successful, you need to join a mastermind. Bottom line, access to this type of group is one of the most powerful things that you can have in your toolkit to grow your business or change your life. And from joining your mastermind, can say 100% truth. I launched one last year because of being in your mastermind, and the group of people that came out of that and the experience that they've had have said the same thing. Such a powerful experience. I'm about to launch a second one this summer that sold out. And women from our group, there's like five of us that still have monthly calls, and we're getting together in person in Oregon in August and doing our own like little mini event. And so the beautiful thing about bringing together a mastermind, and I guess one, for those of you that aren't familiar, Julie, can you explain what a mastermind is?
Yeah. So, I mean, the way that I understand them is a mastermind is a group of masters that come together to share wisdom, to share feedback, to share strategies, to share their experience with each other. Everyone is typically kind of at the same level. You don't have to be in the same industry. I actually think it's great if you're not, because you're just going to get a wealth of information that maybe in perspectives that you would have never had.
Yeah.
You've had the same level of experience, and then you're all rising the tide up together. So you kind of go through a process, and masterminds can be anywhere from 3 months to a year to 18 months. You know, we could talk about the container and how that's set up, but it's really about kind of going through a process and a growth process with a group of like-minded people. And it's incredible. I talk about in the book, I did my very first one over 5 years ago. There's still three women in that group that we still meet up every year. We go on vacation together. We talk all the time. They've become not only three of my very, very best friends on a personal level, but also confidants in business. We've all kind of grown and have really successful businesses in our own right. And I mean, even just the other day, Liz Ryder, who's an active campaign, just she loves it. She was like, hey, give me your password. I'm going to go in and fix something on your, and I'm like, cool, because I don't know how to do any of that. And so she just like went in there and fixed everything for me, you know? And that's just like how it is. Like, we have each other to lean on and support, and it's a really beautiful thing. And so that's what a mastermind is. I will say that three things that you want to look at, I feel like this idea of a mastermind has started to really get thrown around a lot the last 5 years. When I did a mastermind, they weren't as popular in the online business space. I want to say, I think that it can also get confused, because I'll have people be like, oh, I just joined a mastermind. And I'm like, oh, cool. What's it about? Who is it? And they'll start talking about it. And I'm like, that's not a mastermind. That's an online coaching program. Like, completely different. A mastermind, typically, you want to make sure that you are, and this is with anything, if you're going to invest in someone, a coach, a leader, you want to make sure that they have done exactly what it is that you're trying to do. A lot of times why people don't see success is because they invest in people who can talk it and maybe teach it, but they haven't experienced it themselves. And so it's like, you know, if I want to invest in commercial real estate and I'm going to join a mastermind, I'm going to make sure that leader has not only invested in commercial real estate, but he or she is one of the top people when it comes to that. You know, if I want to start working on some VC funding, I'm going to go to the person who was the person for VC funding. And so I think a lot of times now it's like, let me teach you how to create a funnel. Let me teach you how to grow on Instagram. But is that really a mastermind? I would say no. I would say that's just more of a group coaching experience, which can still have immense value, but it's not a mastermind. And I think a lot of times it can actually give masterminds a bad rap, because people go in expecting one thing and then it ends up being something else. So you want to make sure that the leader is more than qualified and has done what it is that you're trying to do. You want to make sure that the container is set up in the exact way that is going to benefit what it is that you need and desire. So is it a year? Is it 6 months? Is it 9 months? Are there in-person events? Does that matter to you? Yes or no? Are there calls? How many? What kind of support that you have? And then I also think with masterminds, it's not really about you learning, like coming in and being like, I need this leader to teach me this. It's about you growing and learning from the peers.
Yes.
If you have a good leader, like, of course, you're going to learn from that leader, because it's just the dynamic. You can't help it. But you're not joining a mastermind for that leader to be like, okay, teach me everything that you've done and that you know so I can become you. It's like, no, I trust that you're going to cultivate an incredible group of people. And from this beautiful energy and from this container, I am going to grow 10 times faster than I ever would, which then lends to my final tip of like, you want to make sure that, and again, this just goes back with you trusting the leader. If you trust the leader, this is going to take care of itself, but that the right people are in that room for you to be able to learn and grow from.
And
if you trust the leader, you don't even have to ask who's going to be in it. Like, it's going to happen. But if you kind of feel weird, those are some of kind of the things to look out for.
So good. So good. Because I think when people are trying to make a decision, they wanted to have some, like, what should I be looking for? And I think you nailed it. The A, who's in the group alongside you, B, has your leader experienced that thing? And I think also the thing that you did a really great job of, and what I've tried to do in mine, is for the things that I am not an expert in, I am bringing in the people that I trust to teach on that subject matter so that you feel like you are getting that aspect of what you need from the program. So unbelievable. Julie, you rock. Can anybody that's listening just understand why I love Julie being a mentor in my life? There's two final sections I wanted to ask you about. One is called We Must Know. So we must know, is there, in the light of social media and digital marketing, is there a platform that you are most intrigued by right now?
A platform I'm most intrigued by right now. I'm doing intermittent fasting right now. And so there's an app. I don't know if it, I guess it's a platform.
Yeah.
It's not a social media platform, but there's an app called Zero that I have been using just as a way to just kind of boost energy levels. It's been really interesting what I've been learning. So I like that. And that's pretty much it. You know, I'm not on TikTok. Instagram I use for my business, but that's, it doesn't really fascinate me anymore. It's not a growth tool. It's more of an engagement tool. And that's pretty much it.
Love that. Zero. Okay. Awesome. Number two, is there a must follow account that you think we should go to, and on which platform? Somebody that you really love and resonate with?
I mean, I would say Instagram because I just tend to spend most of my time there. Who have I been following lately? I don't know. The first person that comes to mind is Gabby, my friend Gabby Bernstein. She's just amazing. She's incredible. I've been in that space this year with books, and she is the queen of books. Yeah. You know, not only is Gabby an incredible human being, but she's a great marketer. And I say that in not in this like slimy way. Like, she's a purpose-driven, phenomenal marketer, service-based saleswoman. And I think a lot could be learned from watching, you know, and she's kind of OG too, which I like. And just watching her constantly show up consistently and innovate and just pour into her audience is very inspiring to me.
Awesome. We're going to drop her handle in the show notes. Yeah. And I think when you are a good marketer, you're not slimy. If you're doing a good job, you're normally coming across in the best light possible. Awesome. And then lastly is ask and receive. So I like to allow listeners to help you with something. So is there one thing that you would like to ask for help or support on?
Yes, buy my book and share it with the world. And if you like to listen to books, you don't like to read them, you can buy the audiobook. But that would be my ask. It's $27 and, you know,
of epicness.
But if it's not the right fit for you, I'm sure that you know someone in your life that could benefit from it. You know, men can read it too, but it is predominantly for women. But maybe it's for you, or you have a wife or a sister or a mom or a cousin or a colleague that could benefit from it. And absolutely buy my book, buy my audiobook.
And you're just supporting my friend and another female entrepreneur. So you should do it anyways and just gift it to people. Buy it for your whole team. Yes. Amazing, amazing. So Julie, where can people find you? Where can they find the book?
Yes. So juliesolomon.net is my brand new website that I just relaunched. It will be relaunched by the time this podcast comes out, and it looks fabulous. I'm so excited. So you can go there to learn just more about me, my story, all the different ways that you can work with me in terms of how I show up and coach and support women. And then juliesolomon.net/get-what-you-want. If you go there, you can order the book wherever books are sold. But if you go to that site, we make it really easy for you. And then you can just pop in your order number and you're going to get access to a live virtual Get What You Want workshop that I'm doing later this summer, where I really dive into a lot of the principles and tools in the book. And then the Influencer Podcast, wherever you love to listen to podcasts, I'm there every Wednesday, dropping new episodes there. And then, as I mentioned before, I tend to spend most of my time on Instagram, and I'm at Jules, J-U-L-S, Solomon, S-O-L-O-M-O-N.
Beautiful. Y'all, the Influencer Podcast has helped shape Positive Equation. So when anybody says you do a great job marketing, go listen to Julie. She brings on incredible guests, and you just share a lot from your heart and your experience. And I think that's one of the things that I love about you and the support that you've given over the years. So I am super thrilled to support you in this book. Again, I do have a copy that will arrive. When do you receive your book? I guess that's a good question.
Yes. So the books hit June 7th. So once you order it, it takes like a couple of days to get to you. Or if you get the audiobook, you get it immediately.
Cool. Okay. So awesome. So I have that one copy. So DM me, tag Julie, tag me, post a story, let us know why you want the book. and I'll ship it out to you. And Julie, thank you so much for your time. And I wish you all of the luck in getting what you want from this book.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell I love talking all things digital? To make this show better, I'd be so grateful for your feedback. Leave a review, take a screenshot of this episode, share it on Instagram stories, and tag Positive Equation with one E so I can reshare and connect with you.